call this second monthly meeting of the Port of Port Townsend to order. I'm going to stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, so the agenda. Do we have any additions or corrections to the agenda? Nope, okay, so I move we approve the agenda.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay, so we're going to start with the public hearing. And tonight we'll be having the first public hearing on the second draft of the budget that was presented last meeting. This is the first of at least two public hearings and possibly three public hearings on the 2016 budget. No action is expected to be taken tonight. So at the end of this night, we're not going to be adopting any rates or changing any salaries. This is the purpose of this public hearing is to hear what the public has to say and regarding the 2016 budget. So we're going to start the public hearing portion right now. The public hearing is open. All persons wishing to be heard should have signed in at the sign-in table. And if you have not done so, if you want to speak, please do so now. Okay, the rules. The public hearing will proceed in an orderly fashion. Everyone will be given an opportunity to be heard. Anyone making comments should give his or her name and address. Please speak slowly and clearly as proceedings are recorded, and I have my hearing aids in. In all fairness to all in attendance, each person will be given an opportunity to address the commission for a period of not to exceed 3 minutes. Unused minutes may not be transferred to another individual. I am requesting the commissioners to hold their questions to the public until everyone's finished. This is the time for presentation of testimony. This is not a time for debate. No debate is allowed. Before hearing from members of the public, I'm going to introduce Abigail Berg, who will make her staff presentation.
So the second draft of the 2016 operating budget has been put on the website. We discussed it in the last public meeting, and I assume everybody's going to look at it. It includes the assumptions on the first page.
Okay, so that's okay. The first name on the list is Carol Tabler. Tabler.
Tabler.
Tabler.
Can you get to the podium?
Yes. That way we make sure we get it on the microphone.
Increases bother me so much as what the court does
doesn't do with money. I don't keep my vote in Port Townsend anymore. And it's why I don't like policies. Words like high-handed and arbitrary come to mind. We're focusing on minor things and letting the larger things recede into the background. It's going to catch up to us at some point. I spent a lot of money here last year. For me, it was a lot of money. Probably half my income went into my boat and into the port. And I was required to continue paying for my empty space on the linear dock during the 2 months I was hauled out. I didn't dare risk anchoring out. You know what happened when the southeast wind came? So I was told I'd get bumped down to the bottom of the list if I gave up my sled. I had a spot and I was ready to go back in the water. So what are you losing when people get tired of the way things are around them? Ask any of your employees of the court if I've been a good tenant. Ask your accounting people if I paid my bills on time. Ask your environmental officer if I was helpful when there were concerns about oil spillage. I've been responsible in all ways. And I want to keep my vote here in the list because I can't pay the increased rates. I'd be happy to give the court more money for more. If I thought the court administration were honest and were putting the health and well-being of the court first. Or perhaps I should say the survival of the court. Are we going to be able to make new stormwater runoff standards? Apparently that project is not done. I went on the website and dug out what I could about it. It doesn't seem to be anything to reassure me that we're actually going to be able to comply.
Carol, that was your 3 minutes, so we can wrap it up.
All right. So you know we've got new construction in places where we don't need it. And what about the breakwater at Point Henson? There's a lot of ways we can lose this work. The federal government can take it away from us. We can be allowed to no longer work on boats here, engine out. And yet certain things have just consumed the public consciousness and continue to be like the widening of the boat ramp as if that was just of such vital importance. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Carol.
Okay, next up is Ron Hayes.
If you don't mind, I would like to hand out these schedules. Is that all right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it's a one-page summary schedule of, and there's copies for the audience so they can see what I'm talking about. Oh, yeah.
Here,
I'll take it. Great. Thank you. So, should anybody else not get one? Okay. My name's Ron Hayes. I live in Port Townsend. And I'm not an expert on the mortgage and stuff like that. But I am an accountant, and I just wanted to maybe present a summarized version of our budget, just so everybody can understand all the components that fit into the budget. So this document that I handed out has columns across the top, A, F, G, H, and I. And the budget that Abigail is talking about is the second draft, which is in column H. And column H starts off with the operating revenues. If you look down to line 6, that's $5,189,427. If you go to the second page in of that real detailed packet that you guys picked up over here, you'll see the operating revenues total. So this is pulling that number, and then you go to the next page, you'll see the total operating expenses, listing everything from salaries to benefits to payroll taxes, maintenance, et cetera. And that totals $6,043,350. You subtract the expenses, and again, operating refers to the operations, the Boat Haven Marina, the Boat Haven Yard, Point Hudson, the buildings that are leased out, the airport, closing. It's everything that, you know, is what the port is. And so just looking at the expenses for that operation and the revenues for all those operations, we have a loss. We're predicting a loss of $853,923. And I know that sounds, wow, that's a lot of money. But below the line, if you go down to line 17, you'll see non-operating revenues and expenses. That's where the property taxes that we collect for the port go. And so that's revenue. That helps us to the good. We get grants. That's on line 19. And next year, we're predicting $113,000. And then there's interest. We have some really significant interest expense on the marinas because we replaced the A&D docks, we did Point Hudson, and then there's some interest expense for the yard for the lifts and things like that. But anyhow, the after deducting all the expenses in the non-operating revenue area, that's line 17 through 24, there's revenue left of $750,000. Is that my?
Yep. Okay. Finish your thought.
So anyhow, if you subtract these two, we end up with a net loss of $104,000 for the second draft of this budget. And that's unacceptable. We've never had a loss that I'm aware of. And I think we need another revision of the budget so that we can balance the budget. And that was really the purpose of my forum. So I hope I didn't bore everybody. Thank you.
Thank you, Ron. Thank you, Ron. Melinda?
Don't start. Hello, my name is Melinda Bryden. I'm a retired accountant in the BS in accounting, MBA, and CTA. And I want to first thank Abigail for persevering to get the budget on the draft done, especially the condensed summary. Which is what I would like to refer to. But first, I'd like to reiterate the port's primary responsibility to the citizens of Jefferson County, and that is economic development for the county as a whole. There is nothing in the charter that says the marina is just for the citizens of Jefferson County, and there's a reason for that. It is the port's fiduciary responsibility to garner the best return on its assets and to use those funds to generate economic activity for the rest of the community. As we finally realized after Abigail began applying the debt service for assets, all lose money except for the property leases. You commissioners then determine which economic engine should be funded. Most of us believe that the shipyard is an important economic engine as it provides 400 jobs, and those wages help to support the community as a whole. Port Hudson is an emblem of Port Townsend's character, and its transient moorage and wooden boat shows stimulate significant activity with the downtown merchants, local hotels, and eateries. So the taxpayer can understand why they help to fund these assets, because of their impact on the economy as a whole. This does not mean, however, that the port should not be charging to the best possible rates for the services that it provides. Why? Because when we talk about the customers of the port, they are the citizens of the county. It is the citizens that elect the commissioners, not the mortgage tenants, not the shipyard tenants, not the trailer boat club. It's the citizens of the county because we fund the port through our taxes. On to the schedule. The budget revision, and not the second draft, but the third draft, shows a strong, healthy port. As Ron stated, operations are still in a loss position, but they would regain their footing with rate increases. The vitally important piece is the cash flow projection on the summary schedule. The board has approximately $2.1 million in cash. This cash on hand is required to ensure that the court maintains its debt covenants and has sufficient funding for unknown contingencies. In my opinion, as a retired financial executive, I believe that this is the minimum that the court should hold. Given that position, the budget allows us the latitude to spend $1.15 million in capital projects, as determined by the new engineering study. For the first time, the court will be scheduling its capital needs based on knowledge of what it can afford. I commend the commissioners for their introduction of the engineering study of the assets and for changing its protocol on spending. With this very responsible view, the commissioners will be able to determine when and what other new revenue sources it can initiate and still maintain its financial strength. And if we take a look into the future, we can see that our current debt load will ease in 2019, at which time I hope we will see the true mission of the court fulfilled. Thank you.
Thank you. Jim Heumann.
Thank you. My name is Jim Heumann. I live at 624 Willow Street here in Port Townsend, and we have two boats here in the marina. So I think it sheds some light on what we're talking about today to look back at why local port districts were originally created. Back in the early days of our state, most of the waterfronts in our cities and towns were owned by private interests, mostly railroads, logging companies, and wealthy individuals who had often been given the land in the first place in order to encourage economic development. They ended up with monopolies, and over time they took advantage of those monopolies to the detriment of the local cities and towns. The big complaint back around 1905 was that these private owners were charging excessive wharfage fees and failing to make needed improvements to the docks. So 104 years ago in 1911, after a five-year fight by reform-minded citizens, farmers, longshoremen, and other groups, the first state legislation was passed allowing local board voters to create port districts in an effort to take back control of the state's harbors and return them to the public. The first legislation then focused on commercial use and continued support for economic development. But as time went on and much of the commercial use disappeared, the state legislature added a recreation mandate to the original purpose in 1965, 71, 84, and 2005. Laws were passed encouraging and supporting direct public use and access to port facilities. So I find it interesting that we've come full circle. Today it is the port that is the monopoly. It's the only game in town, particularly here in Port Townsend and most of Jefferson County. And it's ironic that we're fighting over the same things as in 1905. Excessive mortgage fees and needed improvements to docks and other facilities. It's particularly interesting that there's a group of people with a libertarian philosophy who seem to want to go back to the bad old days by encouraging the Port of Port Townsend to behave just like the private interests who the port districts were first created to counteract. They say the port should be run like a private business and that rates should be increased whatever the money will bear. You can do that. You're a monopoly now. You're in charge. But I would submit this directly contradicts the purpose of the port. Now, we could argue the details, whether depreciation should actually be included as a cost of running the marinas, whether the boat ramps and other parts of the port produce a surplus or a deficit, or whether Larry Crockett should get the raise and never get anywhere. Because those details are not the most important thing. The most important thing is how you, the commissioners, make your decisions. You, the commissioner, should be making these important budget decisions based not on a political philosophy, but on the purpose of the port as mandated by the laws of the state of Washington and the spirit of which the ports were originally created. You have a responsibility to the citizens of Jefferson County for reasonable access to the waterfront, and that means reasonably priced access as well as reasonably maintained facilities. However, that's accomplished. Thank you.
Vigo Anderson.
I said no.
Oh, I see, okay. John Collins.
My name is John Collins, live at 4790 Plum Street here in District 1. Just have a kind of a big picture that I'd like to leave with you, to emphasize anyhow. Actually, following on Ron's analysis, something I was well aware of when I was commissioner is that we continue to have a loss on the operating part of the budget. We spend more for operations than we take in for operations. And to some extent, that's justifiable, because we do have a tax base that's supposed to help us to invest in the community. So we don't, we're not like a business where we have to even out the bottom line per se. We're responsible for a larger task. But when we start using the tax revenue to support the operations, it's kind of like eating our seed corn. Those tax dollars are seeds that are supposed to be planted to flourish and create jobs in the community. So to the extent that we can cut down that operating deficit, we're preserving our seed corn so we can do our major task, which is economic development, in a better way. I felt bad when I was commissioner that we didn't make great progress in that direction. It's an ongoing task that you have the opportunity by buttressing the revenue sides to help out and cut down expenses if possible, and continue to make really wise investments like you did in building the administration building. We've invested money that's going to have a greater return, not only in an asset in 10 years, but also continue to stream of revenue. So I encourage you to look at that big picture and preserve our seed corn.
Thank you, John.
Thanks, John.
Let's see, Tom Howard has a question mark after his name.
And I don't know if I'm going to speak or not.
Okay.
I don't have a specific question.
Right, but so this is your turn. You don't want to speak now, then, right?
Correct.
Okay. Eric, I'm sorry, I can't read your last name. Durfee?
Durfee.
I'm
not tonight.
Pardon me?
I'm not going to tonight.
Okay. Well, that's it for the public. Oh, George, you came in late.
Yes.
Okay.
Not my choice.
My name is George Young. I reside at 717 25th Street, Fort Townsend. I have been the author of some 14 years of operating budgets for the Port of Fort Townsend, Port of Olympia, and Port of Fort Angeles. I want to congratulate you on your efforts toward attempting to resolve both short-term and long-term financial issues with the port. The concern that I have is that for the first time in a long, long time, in 2015 on the operating budget, the debt service was identified. And it certainly was an eye-opener, and it should be an eye-opener, because the question becomes, who should service the debt ceiling? Should it be the users, or should it be the taxpayers? Over the years, commissioners, many years before you, had made that evolutionary shift more toward the taxpayers than to the users. Ultimately, what has happened is arbitrarily low rates, and rightly so in the beginning when we were trying to build the marine trades, and we were very successful at that. I think the question becomes, when is a success so that competition is based upon service rather than the moorage haul-out and storage rates being low, and that is the competitive edge for our port. What I'm concerned about is the long-range impact of this. I feel that the rates should reflect not only market rates, but we should spell out for our tenants, for their benefit, that what goes into a rate, and I think the elements into that rate should be the true cost and operation and debt service of all the assets that are being used. It also should include all the administrative costs it takes to operate the system. And more importantly, there should be a mechanism in that rate that provides for the future, that is funding for replacement. I hope that you go back and you look at a rate that is based on all that, or all those issues. Once you do that, there needs to be conversation with the users and the taxpayers of this county. There should be a conversation, not a confrontation. But let's work this out together, because quite frankly, what we are doing is we're slowly killing the golden goose. I urge you to revise your operating budget for 2016. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, there being no further testimony, I will close the public testimony portion of the hearing. So on the agenda now, we have, you have it in front of you, we have the consent agenda. I'm sure you've all looked at the consent agenda.
Yeah.
I move that we can approve the consent agenda. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Okay, public comments not related to the agenda. There's a lot of people out there that haven't said anything yet. Is there anyone that wants to say anything different? Okay. Now we'll get on to the second reading of the 2016 budget, which is a new version that Abigail will walk us through.
So after we met last time, we went through the second draft.
Everybody else has this just out there?
Yeah, they will in a minute. I'm coming up with a $104,000 loss. We took a really hard look at where we could increase revenues and where we could cut expenses. So in doing that, the first page of that handout has the assumptions for the third draft. One of the things that just happened to be is the boat ramp that is scheduled to happen, that got shifted as far as the timing. So those revenues are changed in this budget, although those are capital revenues that don't really have to do with the operating budget, but they are part of the cash flow. When you look at the budget. So in the revenue areas, we looked at increasing Boat Haven and Point Hudson moorage by 5.5%, which is about 3 cents per foot. We consolidated ship moorage revenues with the workflow lift pier usage. It's more administerial. Increased at Boat Haven and Point Hudson monthly guest rates by 5.5, again about 3 cents a foot. Boat Haven reservation fee was eliminated because it isn't really used. We increased the yard haul out by 5.5%, which includes both sides of lifts while maintaining the current lay-day rates. I might add just in that piece that even by raising those yard haul out rates, that still doesn't really cover our costs for each haul out. We increased the estimated bilge water revenue. Again, this was more administrative. We've had more usage, so that's why we were able to increase the revenue. That's not a rate increase. The yard blocking, we found that not in accordance with port policy, some people were prorating that fee, and it's not meant to be prorated. It's meant to be a blocking fee for up to 30 days, and so we were able to recapture some revenue from that change too. Increase long-term storage in the yard by $8,000, which will make storage about 35% of yard rates. Increase the Point Hudson building lease revenue item by $400,000, which just reflects the 100% occupancy, which we didn't have previously. We want to change the transient moorage all year round to 125. And that would be both at Point Hudson and at Boat Haven. Then usage, wharf usage revenues, we're proposing increasing those from $1.35 a linear foot to $1.50. And the nightly RVs by 5%. And then right there, I have the dollar amount, but that is what includes. And then the point that's in the vet facility, that rate, but revenue was increased. Again, that's for usage. The usage has increased, so we're able to capture some more revenue there. So the total change in the operating revenue was about $238,000. And about $28,000 is non-rate related. And then the second page has the expenses that were identified. We took, like I said, a lot closer look at the expenditures. We had to increase salaries and wages by $36,000 and taxes by $12,000, but we were able to reduce benefits by $36,000. So the total increase in payroll was $12,000, but the rest of these items we were able to lower. Legal and audit costs, operating supplies, advertising expenses, bank charges, and utilities, with for a total change in reduction of expenses of $23,000. Do you want to talk about the rates?
Yeah, let's take them to the bottom line and then we can talk about how we got some.
Okay, so with all those changes, if you look at the fifth page of the handout, you'll get you to the net income loss, and we have a positive of $279,000. You have to keep in mind, though, that of that, if you go up to the non-operating revenue, that's $223,000 of that is capital grant money, just to keep that in mind. And I'd also like to take you real quick to the back page, which shows you the cash flow projection of the third draft. So this is just a more condensed version of what all those other pages are. And then it shows you the cash expected by year end in 2016. So we start with the estimated cash balance and the cash flow projection portion, which is about halfway down the page, of $2.2 million. And then we've reduced that by $223,740 because that was included in the 2015 budget because it was anticipated that project would be fully done within 15 months. So we've reduced it by the $223,740 to get to the difference there. And then you add the net income, which is the $279,000, add back depreciation, which is non-cash, $1.5 million, and then reduce by the principal payments that anticipated to be paid for 2016. So we'll have a net increase in cash flow of $1.2 million with an estimated ending cash balance of $3.2 million. And just as an aside, too, for the end of 2015, the estimated ending cash consists of these reserves that are in the lower left hand side of the page, the Brookhaven Reserve, Contingency Reserve, Hazardous Waste, and
yeah, so this was an exercise in trying to come up with a balanced budget. We saw that we were losing $104,000. What would it take to balance the budget? So we looked at all the elements where we could cut, looked at rate increases, with no preconceived notion. We were asked to look at what the local rates were. So we did a local rate study, which includes SQUIM, Port Catalog, and Port Ludlow, and us. I've also included rate cards of each of those facilities in here because a lot of people have questions on other people's rates. So what this told us was just an exercise in coming up with what our present rates are, what SQUIM's present rates are, Port Hadlock and Port Ludlow. I was able to contact SQUIM. They thought that it was going to be between 2% and 3% increase in SQUIM. And in fact, it was voted in Port Angeles for a 2.8% increase. So they voted that yesterday. For this rate study, though, I only put 2% increase. I didn't change anything. I talked to Bob Weiss at Hadlock. He's looking at a 2 or 3% increase also. So I put, again, a conservative 2% increase. And Port Ludlow has not made a decision what they're going to do with their rates yet. But I put a 2% increase just so we could have something to compare. I took those four marinas and averaged them out and came up with an average of what that 2016 rate would be for each of the categories. And I took John Collins's formula and put those numbers into John Collins's formula see what we would have to do to achieve those rates. If you remember, we developed a rate study a long time ago. It's predicated on a base fee and a per square foot fee. What I've included for you here are three different scenarios. One with a penny a foot increase per square foot, one with a 2 cent a square foot increase, and one with a 3 cent a square foot increase. So this shows you, it came out that the 3 cent increase was the one that actually gave us the numbers of the average. So that was what we moved with that forward. So if you look at that last page, I just pointed out, those rates there will give you that. They range from 5.3% increase to 6.5% increase. So those are that's what we did for the marina to put into that budget. The boatyard was a little more difficult, but I was able to get 23 boatyards and better information. And I was able this year for the first time to platypus's rates. We always have trouble doing comps for the 300 ton. So what this will show you is the same thing for boats 25, 30, 40, and 50, what the haul out rates are. It also shows you the lay day rates, which here are some of the lowest. And it also projects out for a 70, 80, 90, and 100 foot boat and 300 ton load costs. There are two Port of Port Townsend lines. The first Port of Port Townsend line is reflected in the budget. It's a 5.5% increase in haul out rates. The second line represents a full cost recovery. We did an analysis of what does it cost us to haul out a boat, which passed out last meeting. So you'll see that even with a 5.5% increase, we're not covering the costs of what it costs actually to haul out a boat. So again, we used the 5.5% increase in the budget assumptions in draft three. So,
thank you, Jim. Okay, so this is the first time we've seen this, so we can open that up for discussion on this second reading, but just be aware that we're not going to be doing, we have another hearing planned for the next meeting, another public hearing that we'll discuss this after we've had time to digest it. And that's going to be at the next meeting in the day. Actually, it'll probably be at the workshop. Bill?
Jim, I read something very quickly in the newspaper today that Port Angeles is doing a rate increase. Is this reflected in this?
No. They voted to raise it 2.8%. That only reflected 2%.
So, yes. It is 2% is what's in here, but they raised it 2.8%. So we're still behind the average by them for 0.8%.
And that's just SQUIM. We don't know what Boathaven is.
That's just SQUIM, right. Yeah.
Boathaven and Port Angeles.
2.8% also. But we didn't use that as a comp.
Okay. Jim.
Yeah, I'm just a little confused by all this paper. Could you just give me the bottom line as to what the proposed percentage increase is for?
Yeah, it's the last sheet on when you got three of them there.
Mm-hmm.
I think that this paper reflects the one where if you look at it, cost per square foot of 0.430, where you see the change percent, it ranges from 5.36 to 6.59.
Okay.
So, that's the sheet that is reflected in the third draft.
Around
5 or 6%. Yeah. And that includes the 2% cost of living? CPI? Yes, that's included. Okay.
Included in the
5.5%
increase?
Yeah. It should be noted that we're not proposing anything. What we want to provide is what it would take to make a balanced budget. So we're not saying that this is what the rate should be. We're just giving information for the commission to make a decision on what a balanced budget would look like.
Yeah, but the budget that just got presented was utilized for this last page. Diana?
That 2.8% that is being raised in Port Angeles reflects 2 years. They did not raise their rates last year. So this was to recoup for 2 years total. It isn't just they didn't raise the rates last year and are raising it again this year 2.8.
that is to be for 2 years. I just want to make that clear.
Thank you. John?
I think it's useful to note that the formula that Jim referred to is unlike probably any of the comparables in terms of how they calculate rates. Because we made the decision at that time we wanted to move towards a square footage cost. Understanding that longer boats are also broader, have a bigger footprint in the water, and ought to pay more, not just per linear foot, but by square footage. And so that's why the percentage of increase is different for larger boats than smaller boats. And over time, the gap between per square cost for a 25-foot boat should start to move closer to square foot cost for a 50-foot boat. They're not now. The 50-foot boat still pays less per square foot than the 25-foot boat.
Okay, any other discussion?
My name is Rick Olton. I sort of did my own cost. I don't know if this is the correct time to implement this, but I've always been told for accounts and it was under a rate cost. And so I just checked on my boat because I don't have any other boat to check on. So I just based it on the 100-foot boat, and I decided to call. Is this the proper time to talk about this?
Sure.
Okay. So I call Port of Bremerton, Port of Everett, Port of Angeles, Paulsboro, Bremerton, and Seattle Terminal. And my boat is 80 feet here in Port Townsend, and it's a licensed commercial boat that I'm working on here in town. So I checked with all the harbor masters and checked online and probably checked 3 times and talked to several different people at each one of these ports. And some places I went to, if I would go to bring my boat in, I was looking for permanent moorage like I have here in town. And some places it's based on a recreational boat. Other places my boat is cheaper because it's an active commercial fishing boat. But other places, like for Angeles, it doesn't really matter if it's active or if it's recreational or called it doesn't seem to matter. And Everett didn't seem to matter in Bremerton. So my numbers come out for this for Port Townsend. Right now, besides the leasehold tax, I'm paying $740 in Port Townsend for an 80-foot boat when there's 12.84% on it. If I go to the Port of Bremerton, they have a great deal right now. You get 1 year for free if you sign up for 2 years, which you have to. So it works out to $553 a month in Bremerton.
But that's for 2 years.
Well, it's a 2-year contract, but you would have to, you know, permanent board. I'm permanent here in town, so that doesn't make any difference.
But the third year would be over $1,000?
No, same thing. You just sort of renew this arrangement that they have going there, according to what I talked to. Port of Everett is $532 for my vote in Everett. Port Angeles, it's $532 also. That's based on 665 foot for an active commercial. Paul's bill was $428 plus, the leasehold tax. Port of Bremerton, Port of Bremerton was $400. I had to plus leasehold tax, so that's the 2-year contract. And Port of Seattle, they base it differently. They're in a licensed fishing vessel, so they base it on your documented length, which is quite a bit smaller than overall length. If you have permanent, if you're going beyond 30 days there, so you're paying so at 62 feet, at 667, but it's $419.74 plus leasehold tax on top of that. Now in town, I'm finding out that I think I'm paying on a recreation boat right now, I'm not sure. But when I look at just what I could get if I lived in another town, drove my boat in, most of these places have space. This is what it would cost me in those towns for moorage plus leasehold tax, and sometimes there's a $12 environmental fee on top of some of this stuff. So it's considerably cheaper for me to be in another town other than my hometown. And I always hear that we're were under the cost of the other places in the port, but I just take my vote, because I didn't want to check out every single footage of what's going on. It's considerably more for me right now, for some reason, than if I went to one of these other ports at the time I voted. And, you know, I have numbers and email addresses and all this information right here that you can check on. But I did call these places again today to see if it was correct or not. And those are the numbers I came up with, and I made a few copies here, so take a look at that. Not that I'm saying we don't need more money, but certainly I can get a better deal for a commercial vessel in the region of Puget Sound, which I thought were fair. I didn't go to Delmarva where they'll change money, that's a big thing over there. But I tried to keep it in Puget Sound Basin that I could get to by boat, that they can have a boat anyway. So
Rick is right. We had this discussion and a good talk. The issue is, if he could fit in the commercial basin, our rates are at $650 a foot on commercial fishing boats. He won't fit in the commercial basin. He sits in a prime spot in a recreational basin, and we don't have that ability to make that a commercial fishing. I mean, I guess the commission could say that one slip is going to be a commercial fishing slip, but it would be unfair to other fishermen that would want that too. But the reason is, we don't have an 80-foot spot in the commercial basin, and our commercial fishermen pay $650 a foot. So that is the differential, and I understand the issue. I don't know how to solve it right now, but
right.
You're absolutely correct.
No, but I just really wanted people to hear what these rates were around Sound. So they're pretty reasonable.
So, and then in all of those rates, Rick, they were for commercial fishing boats, is that correct?
No, they weren't. Some places it just doesn't matter. I'd have to look back in my notes
okay.
And see which ones. But I think at least two of these, it didn't matter if they were a fishing boat or a recreation. So,
do you have copies of this?
I do. I have the online information, which isn't always up to date. So I called and talked to the masters.
So Rick, did you get rates from like Adlock and John Wayne and places like that?
Not John Wayne. I don't think I could put over to John Wayne. And Hadlock, I called them. There wasn't anything available. They didn't have any space for me. There, I didn't call for a blood loan. I just checked with them, the major ports that I knew were, what's, you know, they stood out.
Thank you. Any other comments?
A question. I'm trying to understand the other ports charge.
Well, as John alluded to, if you have a longer boat, a longer slip, you have to have a wider slip line, a wider width of a slip, which takes up space in our limited space in our marina. So it was a decision that was made back when John was a commissioner to go ahead and charge for how much space the boat is occupying, not just for the length of it, because there's more than just length to a boat, there's width also. And that's what everyone in town seems to be quite happy with, the square foot formula, because it more equitably assesses how much space the boat's taking up in the limited amount of space we have in our marina. And perhaps if you'd like to expand a little bit more on that, you're the author of the square foot formula.
I think it came to our attention, especially when AV dock was being redone, we realized construction costs for longer docks were more because you had to have wider slips. And that just seemed like a more equitable way to do it. The formula was designed so that it's not a, they don't pay equal per square foot now. That would have been a really big hit on the big boats. And that's why we have a formula that's got a mixture of a base figure plus a square foot figure.
Okay, I guess my thought was, well, the slip exists. It can only accommodate up to so wide boat. So what difference does it make if it's this wide or this wide? But you can't use the other space.
You have to build it bigger to start with.
So just because of the...
Okay. Any other discussion on the second, third draft of the 2016 budget?
I'd like to get a copy of Rick's information at some point.
Okay. Well, having that being taken care of, we don't have any other immediate action items or other items, so we'll go directly then to staff comments.
Well, this is going to go quick.
Yeah.
We've worked on the budget for the last 2 weeks.
These are just copies of that.
Okay, wait, just a minute. We have the question mark turned into a yes?
Well, I just got a slide and a quick question. I don't see anything about increases for the airport.
So there are no fees for the airport except leases, which are long-term leases that have CPI increases every year. So those CPI increases will take effect this year. But there are no tie-down fees. I guess there are tie-down fees, but we have two airplanes tied down, so we're not talking about a plane. But there will be a 5.5% increase in those tie-down fees also.
Okay, any other staff comments? Okay, last call for public comments. Yes?
I appreciate what the gentleman was saying, but it bothers me a great deal to take it if it's an anomaly, because his boat doesn't fit in a commercial. I just don't see where it's relevant to the discussion. And there's got to be a reason that people want to moor here, and so it's location. Would it make sense for your gentleman's boat, for example, to be in Bremerton? I think it's a good deal, because if it is, then that makes sense. But there's the location of Fort Townsend has to be considered as well, not just one another port.
I'd like to comment back on that.
Okay.
I don't live in Bremerton. I live in Fort Townsend, and my whole business is based out of Fort Townsend. I don't want a selfish one, Fort Townsend. Use my job as an office and a front office. Talk about fish selling facility also. And so, I've lived here for 30 years. I don't want to drive to Bremerton and reestablish this whole business there. I want to keep this business in Fort Townsend. I don't want to make Fort Townsend so desirable that everybody else that wants to move here, and then I can't live there anyway. It's sort of this catch-22 situation. So, you have to work with the people that live here when they're paying the taxes here too. I understand that I don't want to spend thousands of dollars driving down the road for a lot of time, so I'm glad to pay a little bit more than what it takes.
That's right.
Okay. Any more public comments? Go ahead, John.
Question. Am I correct on the heavy haul up to 5-day minimum on labor?
Yes.
So, Abby, I disagree then about the haul outs still not recovering what they do because they do, if you consider late. And you figure even on the small haul out, the 40-foot boat example is a $37 difference of a loss, but no boat hauls out without this one label. So it seems to me it does cover its costs.
One of the reasons we looked at that was to hold rebates to a minimum, so we didn't raise rebates, but they're 63 cents. If you look at that chart I passed around, most rebates are $1, $1.25, some even $2. It's important for this port because of the long-term projects we have to keep rebates reasonable. And really, it's the haul-out that takes us the manpower, the equipment, and all the upkeep and appears. So that's why we thought the increase would probably be more prudent than trying to increase the rebates. Again, it's just another way to generate budget.
Right, I understand that. I just want to say it bothers me as a marine trades person that it's assumed that it loses money when in fact there are the lay days there, but it doesn't lose money.
Yes.
I have a question, Jim. mentioned there that about the maintaining of the docks and so forth. Is there any future for the rest of the docks to get upgraded? Is that even on the horizon?
Yeah, matter of fact, in January, Eric has been working for 2 months now on the capital facilities program that includes a full upgrade of CD dock, some of the commercial leasing. You know, we're trying to come up with a funding plan of where do we get that $10 million to do it? But yes, it's in the scope. And if you follow the next month or so, we're going to bring that plan out for everybody to comment on.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Okay, any other comments? Yes.
We had our first rain 2 weeks ago, a substantial rain where we could actually get a sample, and we haven't got the results back yet, but Al is very confident that we're going to do better. We just cleaned the system, which it's a double-edged sword. It cleans the system, but it also churns up a lot of stuff. Right. So we'll have the results back probably by the end of the week.
All right. So will that be on the website? Or
you can put it there, sure.
Okay, commissioner comments.
I'll go.
Go ahead.
Go ahead. Couple of things. We went to Small Ports Conference, and you'll have to apologize. I've got a cold, but you know, there's a lot of emails flying around, and I think all of us. I appreciate the emails. You know, it's interesting to read what's going on out there, and. One of the emails that came out or that was talked about was the extra expenses of going to conferences and, you know, whether or not the port should be spending money on going to conferences. And I thought about that while I was sitting in Chelan at this conference. It was not videotaped. There was not a lot of audio there. So it wasn't something where we could be hear and, you know, watch a TV and be presented with this conference. And both Steve and I were amazed of my coming up on 2 years now as a port commissioner. This was by far the most productive conference that I was at. And it was just the Small Ports Conference. It wasn't the annual conference. But in terms of what I mean by productive, I learned about USDA grant funding, and one of the names I wrote down was Pete Langley, who has been in here several times looking for funding to work with the Foundry. Well, I think there's a great program that we could plug Pete into and help him out. And I don't know if it'll be successful or not, but I'm certainly going to bring it up to Jim and say, hey, you know, this is what we learned at Small Ports. Another funding aspect. The city of Quilicine sits in this quagmire of GMA, Growth Management Act regulation, where it can't really exist. You know, all the commercial businesses in Quilicine are dead. You drive through Quilicine, there is no commercial business. There's a lot of empty buildings there. The reason is none of the owners can put in a septic system because they don't have enough space for a septic field. There's a big push to put in a community what we call a waste, not waste management, wastewater system. And basically it's a big septic field. Maybe it's a pump septic field, maybe it's conventional, I don't know. But at the Small Ports, there was a great idea of, again, USDA, that they have done this for communities. So it's like when you go to these things, not only are you immersed with other ports and you're saying, did you guys really do this and how did you do that and what's going on, but you actually hear the people that have the money giving you the presentation and the how-to. So I understand the budgetary concerns, but I just want to caution everybody that, you know, be like John said, we want to be careful we don't cut out, stop eating our corn seed. And these annual conventions are a pretty small part of the budget, and they provide a lot of really important information to all of us. So that's one thing. The other thing is, I hear you about the rates. Believe me, my wife is probably not going to sleep with me if I vote for that third draft of the budget. So, you know, I've got 110 feet of Point Hudson, and I pay that rate, Rick. So I hear what you're saying on the rate. So I don't know where we'll end up. I'm more than happy to talk on the phone. I'm more than happy to have coffee with people. I need a lot of input to know what you guys feel is the right way to go. I also agree with John that it's smart to, you know, operate up particularly the revenue and the expense in the positive. And I just commit myself as a commissioner that I will work really hard to go line by line and make sure it doesn't just sit on the permanent mortgage ratepayers, that, you know, we try and cut expenses in every way that we can to make this thing work.
Well, I just want to say, I hope in the future we're going to have an opportunity to have a strategic advisory committee helping weigh in on our budget process. And I think that's something that we haven't had the benefit of since Pete and I have been here. And I just sort of hope in the future that we'll accomplish reconvening a strategic advisory committee.
That's it. Okay, I just came back from that conference and I'm all shiny and new about all the good stuff we learned too. Every time I go to one of these things, I'm just amazed at how much useful information there is and how we don't have to reinvent the wheel. I'm going to go to one tomorrow. Actually, I'm leaving right here to go to one in Bremerton. And it's a boatyard conference where we can get to talk about what other people are doing in their boatyards to contain dust, or if pavement is it, or what the things are. So I'm going to be talking to other folks that are there doing it. By the same token, we just had a success here with our biochar that we're going to be sharing at other environmental conferences next year, because they have an environmental conference every year. So these conferences that we go to, I mean, they take a lot of time out of my life, which I just as soon spend fishing, but I get so much value out of them. And then by that same token, the board does too, that I just can't say how much value they've given to the port. And like I said, this last one, I had the same thought Pete did when I heard Pete Langley, you know, when I heard that EDA grant thing. So we're going to have some positive benefits from this one too. So the next meeting will be the next public hearing on this budget draft that you just got tonight. That will be Monday, November the 9th. And the workshop will begin at 9:30. And then a public hearing again at 1:00. And so this meeting is adjourned.
No, it is a Monday. It's a different day, but the next meeting is
it's a Monday, not a Wednesday. Okay.